To this talk on macro development, or this BOF on macro development. So we've been told that we have to have an agenda. So basically, I'm running through these steps, and the getting started is actually where the meat of the talk actually is. And I've got another agenda.
Please use the microphone.
Oh, sure. Is that better? Maybe I need to pick it up. Okay. Oh.
Do you want to stand? Talk like this, or you have it in your hand?
Well, try it like that, and then if it doesn't work, I'll... How's that? Okay, the meat of this session is really in the getting started, but I'm going to run through this initial bit anyway. So who am I? My name's Ian Lawrenson, I'm from New Zealand. I initially wrote the migration guide, which is now part of the author's documentation. While I was writing that documentation, I identified a number of macros that would make a user's life a lot easier coming from Microsoft Office to use OpenOffice. And so I set about writing those and ended up calling them Ian's macros. And so they've been available. While I was writing those macros, I discovered that the amount of documentation for entry-level writing of macros was a bit thin on the ground. And so I developed a wiki to try and compensate for that. And I guess that's how I ended up being here now. Okay, just to get a feel for who you are, how many people in the room have recorded macros in OpenOffice? Okay, there's a few. Of those that recorded them, did it actually do what you wanted? That's an interesting answer. Okay, how many people have written macros in OpenOffice? Okay, so about half. Okay, written macros in VBA? Not written macros at all? Okay, right. And what about anybody not programmed in any language?
So,
I know I've got programmed in there, but given that most people have said that they've programmed before, has anybody not done any programming? Okay. At times, sometimes this may go a bit fast, I don't know. We'll see where we go. I'll run through what I've got, and if it's really boring, just tell me to stop and we'll actually set a discussion going. Does that sound reasonable?
Sure.
Yep. Okay. If you get nothing else out of this session, this is the URL of the wiki, and it's got, on that wiki, it's got all of the information that's in this talk. So, ext.openoffice.org.nz. All right? That's really the main punch. I could just about finish talking now. Okay, the macro recorder in UnoDispatch. As we just saw with people putting up their hands, people have tried recording macros, but it's not really the best approach. Let's have a look at it and why not. Let's have a look at doing a simple task. We're going to type some text and put in a paragraph and then have a bold word in the next sentence. All right? So when we record that, it looks something like this. For such a simple task, it's an awful lot of code and it looks confusing and really isn't that brilliant. So a first step to perhaps fixing that, why is this so slow? What I'm going to do now is actually look at a portion of that in more detail. Right, so I've just taken that bit that I circled and brought that up so you can actually see how it's, what it's looking like. And you'll see that it's got this dispatcher execute dispatch and so on through. What I did was write a wrapper, and we're going to see the wrapper in the next screen, and the wrapper is available from the wiki. A wrapper just being a piece of macro code to try and make life easier. I called it function dispatch, and that all of that recorded code is that's achieving the same effect, and as you can see, it's a hell of a lot shorter. I don't know why this is going so slow. All right, so that's the wrapper. I don't expect you to have a look at it, just making sure that it was done. Now let's look at exactly the same example using API calls. So we've got this thing called the dispatcher, which doesn't actually deal with the underlying object model of OpenOffice.org. So we really now need to have a way of actually getting to grips with the object model of OpenOffice. And the good news is, regardless of what language you use, there's things that are pretty consistent. The first is the methods that are called. It's consistent regardless of the language that you use. I'm going to try. The properties are the same. However, the way that you define constants is different in the different approaches, and the way that you may actually get started in accessing your object. So you typically have a starting point and you work your way down to get to the thing that you're actually wanting to work on. So we'll be looking at each of those points in a little more detail as we go through. Here's exactly the same example written in Python. I've tried to make it as short as possible, and this is the exact code. You can put this into and it'll run exactly as you see here. Right? The property, the methods are exactly the same. The properties are the same. But the way of accessing the constants, as I said before, is different. Right? I hope you saw the connection between the bold and the bold. And your starting points can be different. Is this the sort of thing that you're wanting? Yeah? We're getting a few nods. Hopefully I'm not boring you to death. Okay, so getting started. Would you like me to... So how many people haven't actually even gone into the IDE? Have most of you gone into the IDE? Anybody not gone into the IDE? I know there were some people that haven't done some programming. Okay, well, everybody's done that. How many people have used the X-ray tool for writing macro? Right, so we've got about three people that have used the four maybe out of the room, and yet a good over half the room had actually tried writing macros. Well, I reckon, I'm going to skip through some of this because, I'm going to open the discussion up a bit because I think this is boring. Is it boring? these are the naming conventions that I've used in BASIC. And I got it from, I think, originally a Sun piece of documentation. Yet most Python code, rather than using O, for example, uses X. Can anybody tell me why? No? Okay. Well, anyway, those are the... When you look at my code in the wiki, these are the naming conventions that I've used. I have a lowercase first letter that denotes the type of value the variable is going to hold. I try and use long descriptive names, although I can be pretty bad at that, and using camel case, so that's, as you can see, with the upper and lower case, except for when I'm using counters or if I'm building up a string, I might use a nice short IJK for the counters and S for building up strings. I found it difficult when learning what was being provided by BASIC and what was actually somebody else's code that they'd written. And so I figured if I had that problem, maybe other people would have that same problem. So anything that my main macro, I give it a descriptive name. And then anything that macro calls, if it's a subroutine, I prefix it with sub. And if it's a function, I prefix it with fn. If it's an event, like clicking the OK button, then I name it subevent and hopefully something which is going to make sense. So when you have a look through the code that I've put into the wiki, or other people have put into the wiki, that's the conventions that have been used. The X-ray tool, in my view, by Bernard Marcelli, is an absolute must. If you get nothing else out of this talk, and you didn't miss the the wiki bit, then for Pete's sakes, download the X-ray tool. I could not have done anything that I did without it. What is it? It's a runtime equivalent of code completion. So kind of what it does, you know how, for those of you that have written in VBA, when you start typing, and it sort of completes you. You shows you the list of methods and properties that can come from that point going down. Well, this is kind of like a runtime equivalent that you can say, here's the document. What are the methods and properties in my document? And then, okay, there's something there called get current controller. So I get the current controller. And then I can see from there that below that there's another method called get view cursor. And so you can work your way down to get to the object that you want. Is it worth having a look at it? Yeah, I think so. Okay. I'm actually going to run a Python example to demo X-ray. Right, so this is a piece of Python code which is actually calling up the basic code for the X-ray. And this is what it looks like. Now you'll see that there's things like these pseudo props. The pseudo props are basic's way of making shortcuts. When I've tried to write in the wiki, I've tried to avoid using basic shortcuts so that when you see the example pieces of code, whether you're writing in Python or Java even or basic, that the concepts and the examples will be pretty much identical, I'm hoping. And so we can do things like, where am I? So this is the view cursor. If I have a look at the methods that are available, right? If I want to have a look at the documentation for part of it, so like remove key handler, I can click on this button. And this is a really, really, really slow computer, by the way. And it brings up the documentation in the SDK. The SDK being the software development kit, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in a moment. Now, this documentation is sometimes pretty hard to understand, and I'm hoping I'm going to be able to make it a bit easier through this talk. So let's have a look at the code in the Python example. X-ray from Python. All right. So calling it from Python, I can just go X-ray, and I actually there's what I the first call that I did. Is that big enough to see? No, okay, so that was from looking at it from Python, but what about from BASIC, since that may be a better place to actually go from? Organize macros, openoffice.org BASIC, edit. In BASIC, you go, that would figure, wouldn't it? Where am I? And unfortunately, the example calls it up three times, I think. Close. Demo is finished. Phew. Okay. Sorry about that. X-ray. And this component. Component, when I learned how to type. And if I run that, so you can see how, I'm hoping you can see that by using X-ray, you can drill down to find the particular object that you're wanting. You can easily access the relevant documentation, and that's why I'm saying it's a must. Okay. Okay, so that's what I talked about. Okay. The SDK stands for the Software Development Kit. The links where it says to download it from is as per here. However, that's pretty out of date by now. So if you're wanting to do development for 1.9, then I've actually got a process written there for actually finding the more recent versions of it. So that's that. The other thing I had there. In the documentation for the SDK, it has instructions about how to install it. If all you're going to be doing is writing BASIC or Python, you don't have to worry about installing it. All you need to do is unzip the file and away you go. Okay, there are some terms which you may find useful when you're looking at the documentation. An interface is a definition of a set of methods and their arguments, i.e. it doesn't actually do anything. It's really just saying what anything that provides this interface must actually do. A service actually does the work. Correct me if I get any of this wrong. All right. Methods are routines that actually do something. Properties are values, as we saw, like the character weight. Modules are merely a grouping mechanism for the naming purposes. So you'll see things like com.sun.star.text, right? So the .text bit is the module bit. And that's the rationale behind that naming. So hopefully that starts to make a little more sense. Okay, so there are some common basic starting points. And there are different starting points, as you hopefully saw before, but between the different languages. The star desktop is where you'd start for doing things like creating a new document or opening a document. Right, the star desktop concept goes back to pre-5.1 or whatever it was, when there actually was a desktop, and where you worked from there. Now, one of the things I've tried to do in the wiki is to try and make these wrappers to make life a little easier. Now, in other presentations and questions, people have been saying the API is too hard. I actually really like the API. I think it's really great. But it does give a lot of flexibility. The downside of flexibility is that, hell, this is what you need to create a new file, right? Well, who cares? You can copy a wrapper out of the wiki and away you go, right? Function new doc, I want to write a doc. That's pretty simple. Creating and opening a document, same sort of concept. Create a wrapper and away you go. So I'm hoping that those of you that have actually been writing macros will have a look at my wiki, pull it apart, all right? If it's crap, change it, all right? That's what it's there for. Anybody can go in. You don't even have to register. I've had 3 spam attacks, right? And I thought, okay, that's not too bad. I can live with that. They're easy to fix. Okay, this component. So this component is the currently open document. So that's a really common starting point. You got it, your document, and you're wanting to now to do something with it. Having got, it may be that you're actually wanting not just to work on the whole document, but actually what's currently selected, a really common concept, right? I've selected something, I want to do some work on it. So that's what this get current selection thing is about. However, how do you know what's been selected? All right, so in Writer, they may have selected a drawing object, and maybe they've selected some text, and so you need to actually have a way of finding out what's currently supported. BASIC provides two tools which are really useful BASIC provides one tool, which is has-UNO interfaces. And mostly you don't need to use it. There is some times when you do, and that's particularly if you're going through all of the currently open documents, because some of the open documents don't actually have the support service, which is a pain, like help. I thought I had something. Yeah, that's it, sorry. So now let's have a look at working with objects. Properties. In BASIC, there is actually a shorthand way of actually dealing with it, but the way that I'm trying to use is consistent so it'll work in whatever environment you're doing. So you have this concept of saying something like set property value, and you have these property pairs. So you've got a name for the property and then a value that you're going to be giving to it. This particular example is working through each of the current selections in a Writer document. Enumerations. This took me a while to get my head around this one, I confess. I'm a bit thick. But let's say you're wanting to look at each paragraph in your document, or each paragraph within a selection. So the difference between these two, This line here is going to work on the entire document. This one line here is going to work on the current selection. So we can enumerate through each of the elements. So in this case, we're going to go through each of the paragraphs, text elements, and a text element can either be a paragraph or a table. So once again, these sorts of code blocks are in the wiki. Named or index access. So in each of these are all looking at sheet examples for calc. So I can refer to the first sheet by get by index starting at zero, right? So the first sheet is number zero. I can get it by name. So I have, I first typically would do has it got it by name, and then get it if it's got it. I can loop through all of the available object names, right, as we see here. And we've got insert, replace, and remove, which are all fairly similar. So those concepts of creating enumeration and working your way through it, having named or index access, are used repeatedly throughout the API. So once you've got your head around those, you're really getting going on doing things. That's all very well for things that currently exist, but what about if you're wanting to actually create something new? And this is actually, I still have difficulty here sometimes, and we'll get to that towards the end. Quite often there's a create method. So for example, if I'm wanting to create a text cursor, now I talked earlier about the view cursor, so that's the cursor that you actually see on the screen, that you can move around and actually see what's happening. You can also create like a hidden cursor so that you can be working completely somewhere else in the document and accessing the text. All right, so I can create a new text cursor. So there are methods for creating various objects. And that's that. Sometimes I need to create an object which is related to some other object, but there isn't actually a particular create instance, a create method. And so we need this more general create instance of an object. And so you have this where you create it, and then you've got to add it to it to the object. I'm going to come back to these declared variables shortly. There's create UNO service. So if the thing that you're working on isn't actually dependent on something else, then you've got this basic command for create UNO service. And for other languages, you work from the service manager. But so there are structs. Structs from other languages are like records. So you have named portions to your variables. It may seem really silly, but it actually took me a while to understand that A, it was case sensitive, and when I needed to use upper and lower case. So you might find this a pain, but I'm going to go through it each time. Up to everything up to the name of the struct is always lower case, and then the name of the struct itself is in title case. You know, constants. Now, same sort of concept. We've got this lowercase bit, then the title case, and then the constant itself is always an uppercase. Maybe I'm thick, but it took me actually, it's a simple little thing that took me a while to actually get my head around. So I said before that I have problems at times with knowing how to create objects. How do I actually get to the thing that I want? This is kind of my rule of thumb, and if anybody's got a better way, I'd love to hear it. All right. So does the object already exist? Can I actually drill down to it using X-ray? If so, fine, I've solved my problem. I've got to the object. If I can't actually get to it, maybe it's because I actually have to create it in the first place. So will it belong to another object, and does that object provide a method to create it? If so, problem solved. If that doesn't work, we may need to use create instance and then add it to the related object. And if you can't find any of those, then maybe it's that either it doesn't actually belong to another object or it's completely independent of objects. Or maybe it's not actually provided in the API. Okay, that's the formal bit. Okay, questions? Come on. Yeah.
I want to create a macro that creates React. When you save a new version of a document using the OpenOffice version function and features, and in the list of events to React, there is no such a function. Is there a way,
Jürgen,
to assign this macro to this event?
There should be a function to bind this kind of event in closed document you have something like that. Maybe this is not visible in the base IE, but you can also implement this a little bit more over at your own shop add-on, and then you can definitely bind it to this event. Maybe it is missing at the moment. So if it is limiting light issue.
Okay, I've got a question for you lot. How many of you have actually had a look at ENDS macros or know that they exist? Okay, there's a... Okay. Would you like to know some of the things that I've written? Yeah?
I would only say, I think maybe you have spoken about X-ray and just the mast, and it won't be useful to know how to install it. For people, because it's very important.
I heard, yep.
Some people that is not able to accomplish the installation because it's not a package currently.
Yep, I think that's a valid point. Okay, 1.9 or 1.1? Okay. What Paula has suggested is that I actually demonstrate how to install the X-ray component, and the concept of installing component, this is quite common for macros that are currently available on the web. And I'll give a little bit of background to that first, and then I'll do that demonstration. There was quite a lot of discussion, or why wasn't UNO packages being used? And I'll give my reason behind not using UNO packages for 1.1. People had to fully exit openoffice.org, including the quick starter, find a command line tool, copy the package into the right place, run the command line tool, restart OpenOffice, and hopefully the thing's working. Right? And I just felt that was just too hard, all right? And I think OpenOffice did too.
The copy step was not necessary.
Sorry?
The copy step was not really necessary.
Yep. So in 1.9, or the upcoming 2, if you prefer, you can actually, you've got a graphical user interface and you can actually install packages directly. So all of my macros, when I get time, will be converted over to UNO packages for 1.9. Okay, but in the meantime, how did we go about it? So here I am in 1.1. Tools, macros, organize macros, openoffice.org basics. So this is the key string that you're needing to go through. There's an organizer button and a libraries tab. Because what we're going to do is we're going to be taking a library out of a document and putting it into the openoffice.org libraries. We click append and we have to actually now find the X-ray tool. Wasn't that lucky. So there's the document. And when I click open, you'll see in this case there are three libraries. There's the standard library, which is in every document, and there was these two extra ones that Bernard Marcelli wrote. So I don't want to replace my standard one, so I remove the tick from there. I click OK. Oops, I've already installed it. I'll do that again. Okay, let's say this time I'm updating, so I'm going to replace the existing libraries. Okay. Close. And you'll see we've now got the X-ray and X-ray dynamic sitting there, and away we can now run. All right. Thanks, Paul. Some of the things that I've worked on are things like, okay, let's ask, how many of you are calc users? Got a few? Cool, okay. Getting some response at last. Okay. How do you, if you've got a large block of numbers with a few blank cells and you're wanting to put a full stop into the blank cells, how do you do it in OpenOffice? How do you do it, for those of you that are familiar with Excel, how do you do it in Excel? Nobody do it? Does nobody work for a science organization here? All right. Okay, this is a really simple piece of functionality that there was no user interface in Calc for. And it's quite a common thing to do. If you're working in a science organization and you've manipulated your data in a spreadsheet and you're now wanting it to take it through to a stats package, you frequently need to replace the blank cells with a dot. And there was no go-to special blank cells. It took, less than 5 minutes to write the code to implement that. It's really simple, but now that that's available, it made quite a bit of difference. For those of you that use Writer, how do you do cross-references to your headings? Somebody must do cross-references to headings. No? Nobody does cross-references to headings. Okay. Any X-Word Perfect users? I am getting desperate. Okay. What would get you guys fired up and interested? Because you're sitting there dead. I know it's 5 o'clock, you've run through a number of sessions, but what would really get you fired up and say that this session was worthwhile? Nothing.
I would like to know how to insert fields on any other thing other than a writer, if that is possible, of course.
Okay. The question was, how do I insert fields and things other than writer?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah.
God, this is slow. I'll do that more slowly. I'm currently, as you can see, in 1.1.4. So, and there is a show forms function. What sort of fields? How do you mean by field?
The thing is that in any other module other than writer, you have a lot of fields like date. Author, whatever, and you don't have that tool in any other package in Calc. You don't have that tool, which is kind of stupid. So I just wonder if it's something that has to do with the UNO API or something. I think it's Control F2 or Control F12. You have the actual dialogue of the field. That's the way you
other applications don't support it. That can be, but just the code of the application itself is not prepared to.
So you don't have fields, have surface, or property?
It is even below the API level. The code just is not there. So there is no API to it because it is not there underneath. That might be the case.
So you say
it is. In some cases, our applications are rather different beasts that are internally implemented in different ways. So when you do text editing in Calc, the the text engine is a different one than the text engine in Writer. For example, in Calc you can only have a single selection, and in Writer you can have multi-selection.
So I thought the way it was like...
Maybe it is like this.
That's the way the GUI organizes, but I just wonder if through programmatically you can actually force that.
I don't think so in this case.
This specific API is only available in the context of provider applications. And sometimes it really depends on the context where you want to use the API.
Yeah.
It is not available in every application.
Nice.
I have a question if you're finished with it.
Yep. Daniel.
Is there a way to get the open document HTML, you know, the actual HTML text for a game file? Because in a way I know how to do it is to save file, then unzip the file, then just click HTML. It's a way to actually get a method to get the HTML for a file.
My understanding to that is at the moment, I'll repeat the question for those that may not have heard it. The question was, is there an easy way to actually see the XML of the currently open file? Is that a good summary?
Yeah.
My understanding of that is the answer to that is no. There is no easy way. I mentioned before about reveal codes, but there's no real WordPerfect users here, which is a way of having a look at it's a view, if you like, of the object of the objects. I've been considering for some time that it would be really useful to actually have a way of quickly looking at the equivalent XML. And I've been.
You can use a specific filter to create these XML files, so the FK contains two examples, and it's more or less the same filter implemented in C++ and Java. And if you run this example in the SDK environment, then you can directly use this filter inside the office to store your document as a flat XML.
That's only part of the issue, though. You're being able to see the XML, but wouldn't it be nice to be able to say, actually,
XML.
Yeah,
web, right? When you use the web, it is not the whole thing, but it is just an approximation to what you really want. Julian Reuter this morning had an example where he did an identity XSLT transformation as a filter to see what, so you save it for that XSLT transformation, the document, and then some other window popped up. I don't know how he did it. You can contact him directly.
That's very easy. Ah, there he is. Can you just go to tools? And there's this XSLT filter setting. And then click on new. And choose whatever application you want, Writer or Calc.
Writer.
And the important thing is transformation, the transformation tab. And there you need an XSLT script which does not change the structure, this item XSLT script. I will make it available. And then you can see the flat XML file.
Yeah, my comment was that wouldn't it be nice if we could actually do things like change the character weight for a particular property using some sort of GUI interface?
Okay.
Yeah,
sorry,
I got
that
wrong here.
Yep. It seems to me that we've got OpenOffice.org. It's dealing with XML files. Yeah, we can work with XML at a high level, so we can say this is heading one and this is bold and all those sorts of things. But there isn't there isn't a low level, if you like, XML editor specifically for working with OpenOffice.org files, at least not that I'm aware of.
This has some historical reasons, because this API is much older than this open document file format. And we talked already, I think, on the session from Jürgen about API changing, and it is very hard. But if you're interested in starting a discussion how such a new API could look like, I will be happy to participate in that.
For example, there's applications in the KDE that are basically XML editors. You see your document kind of like doc books, and you just say, show me the source, and they will just show you the XML edited, and it's just a viewer. It's kind of like the writer one, that you just change the view source, and then you see the source, and then you go back. I don't know if there's actually real-time transformation happening in that product particularly, but what you're talking about is a third file, generating a third file, which I don't know if that is.
I'm sad to say that, this is some kind of science fiction with our current core of the application.
Right. Question.
Yep.
Do you have any suggestion about compatibility within OpenOffice? I mean,
between Microsoft Office and OpenOffice?
No. Some models written in prepared with OpenOffice 1.1 doesn't work. Actually, do you know?
My understanding is that if it doesn't run, if it was written for 1.1 and it doesn't run in 1.9, there is two possible.
For example, to get the directory or working directory to one thing, to access the configuration API. Configuration API totally has been changed. And another thing, Windows and Windows dialog, file open dialog, file selection dialog, or directory selection dialog returns another return path followed by slash. But in a Unix system, that.
Oh, okay. So, hang on. So you're saying compatibility between different platforms. So.
Versions.
Sorry?
Versions.
Okay. I'll deal with versions first, and then I'll look at platforms second, and feel free, anybody else to correct me. My understanding is that if it's an incompatibility between versions, there's one of two possibilities. One is that it's a bug in 1.9, and so therefore you should put an issue about it. The other is that it was exploiting a bug in 1.1, which has now been fixed in 1.9, which can happen. Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, that makes sense.
There are also cases where things are not, or where things used to work in 1.1, although they were not specified to work that way, or it was not guaranteed that they will work. They work by chance, and they no longer work in 1.9. So. The programmer who used those features that were not advertised actually has to blame himself in that case.
Okay.
That happens also.
Then the next part of, if I understood your question correctly, was working between having macros in different platforms, so whether it be Windows or Linux. I think that in my testing, I haven't come across any problems. I think some people might be manually manipulating the strings for paths rather than using the inbuilt convert to URL. Would that be, and if they've manually added slashes or something like that, then they may be running into problems when they do that approach.
Well, actually,
yeah? Barry?
All right, so I tried to run PyXray, and I saw that actually here's Lawrence, but when I saw the code, I said for Linux, for Windows, for Linux, it had his home. I mean, home Lauren slash OOO slash whatever. So it was going to look for the SDK of Lauren in his machine. So it was hard coded instead of actually an environmental variable. And I don't know if there was a reason why you didn't put an environmental variable like home.
It is implementation. It is some configuration issue.
No, I'm asking
Lauren
because
he wrote it.
Where did you
find this? You got some debugging strings or?
It was 0.6. When I tried to run it, first thing I noticed was that.
Oh, PyXray in Python?
Yeah,
PyXray. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a beta, it's something that needs to be right, and I agree that there might be some viewing outputted because to catch some file or something, but for playing with multiple platform, I think you can tell that there are some tools that permits that allow to change in URL notation or local notation. And I personally advertise that always use URL notations and then switch in only if necessary to the local notation. But if you encounter some hardcoded strings, probably it's for debug that I didn't appear. And if not, then tell me and we'll fix it. I remember, by this way, it's a better version I pulled for feedback and didn't add anything. So feel free to drop me a mail.
All right, sure.
Okay. Tools like the X-ray tool, or I have also seen some written tool in Java sometime, which was more or less the same. And tools like this are very useful for developers. And also, Tool.O comes with a simplified object browser. So when you debug in the macro, you can watch two objects and see more or less similar things. You don't have cross references into the SDK documentation. These things are missing, but you have more possibilities to watch to an object, to a runtime of a macro. And
do you have recursive querying on your object?
I don't know too much details about the object browser. And I normally don't program any basic stuff, so I don't really use it. But I know that it is in OpenOffice 2.0, and it is definitely planned to provide more features like this in upcoming versions, to provide more features in this direction.
So how do we access the object browser? You said that the object browser is built into 2.0.
You can simply type the object variable in the watch window below
The
ID, and then you will see all the properties and interfaces.
So that's been significantly improved in 2.0? Because I confess I just ignored it. I mean, I tried it in 1.1, yeah, and it just didn't give me enough information, so I've ignored it. Okay. I talked before about a reveal codes macro. This is kind of a prototype that I was playing around with. And I'm trying to draw it back to the discussion about looking at the underlying XML. So and each of these buttons provide an alternative way into the interface, if you like, so that you can actually do things like change the style. So at least that's the theory. So what I'm saying is it would be really nice if we could actually see the XML that's building up the file and be able to click on a property and see the range of options that property could actually have. Some of those sorts of, does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Well, anybody got any other questions or anything else anybody wants to talk about? Yep.
This could take some time. About creating central libraries of macros, use the macros for users to download. I guess when somebody downloads a macro off the web, they can run with whatever privileges they have on that machine. So is there a way of knowing that creating a library and you guarantee that what you download is a safe macro to run, other than by hacking the code? Presumably, if you can hack the code, you wouldn't be downloading it in the first place.
I certainly download other people's macros, and I think I can hack code. But as I understand it, macros currently can't be digitally signed. Is that correct?
There will be improvements in the future.
Right.
That Uno components. What we need for them is some kind of versioning and some kind of digital signatures, so that you know what you get, whether these might be corrupted by somebody else. What we probably won't have is any fine-grained security setting like with Java, because we can't put that into the existing code easily. So you have to trust those writers of the macros that they don't do any harmful. But with digital signing, you can then at least be certain that you get what you expect.
Okay. From the wiki, copying blocks of code, yeah, there's a risk because, as I said, people don't even have to register to use the wiki. I get a message whenever anybody changes it, and so I guess you're having to trust me that I'm moderating it appropriately, but there's still a chance that somebody may make a change between when I see that mail message and go in and correct it. So there is a small risk there, but I think it's, hopefully it's not too bad. Lauren?
I think this might be the discussion we have tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's what I was wanting to sort of, I was tempted to move in that direction, but I know we've got that discussion. Because I think something that a lot of us want is a system where that makes it easier for developers to upload macros to a location and easy for people to select and download and install macros. And I think that's part of what Lauren's going to be talking about tomorrow. And that will be a quality assurance process.
By the way, can we, that's basically more a community question, but in this stand of digitally signatures and all that, can we at least provide a repository in the OpenOffice.org website where the ones that at least we post is because they're being previously tested?
I think that's kind of what we were just saying with Laurent, is if that...
I missed it then.
You're basically looking at having a formal system of a repository of tested macros that people can download.
There's several levels of acceptance to the macro
or another. Okay, maybe I should reformat the question. If I want to look for macros in the OpenOffice.org website, which project would be the most keen into publishing those macros? Would it be the API, or would it be the tools, or would it be the...
Scripting, I think, is where you're looking at.
I think it would be a new, something new, an incubator project to test this, and perhaps an extension project. Personally, when I have some macros, I put them on my native one. I apply them on the other list, on native list, and then put where I can put them, so they are on my website. Personal website. There are no way to give. If the code is small, I sometimes give the code status. But for full working example, we have no tool actually to gather all the productions. That's a problem.
Well, we'll investigate in this direction.
Triple macros was kind of like that, but I don't know. What was the status?
Yes, but all macros out. I don't know how macros will run, but is it in the OpenOffice sphere or in something else? What are their licensing? Their licensing schema? I don't know.
Right. I would say the mission from this investigation and such a repository for Udo package of what kind ever.
Yeah.
Basic macros. Real extension, real components, Java components, Python components, whatever. And if we have this digital signing feature in place, then we can create a real good place to have to find final extensions, final Udo packages containing macros or whatever. And then people can go to this official place, can search for new functionality for macros or whatever, which coming as a Udo package, and these packages should be QA and should be digital signed, and then the user can trust that everything should be fine and okay.
Right, but I don't see why digital signatures has to do with our central repository. I mean, there's totally independent things.
Only
one is to download.
Who signs?
Who signs? Who signs?
Right.
But if the producer that hurts, which is bad, hurts, and signs, it's okay, can cannot trust him. It's
right.
Not because it is digital sign, you have to trust this signature.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. Is there any documentation that mentioned about how to invoke macro from command line? Actually, SOffice run macro dot macro param // file name /library or .. So I can find an article in all forums. But is there any documentation or written documentation?
Launching, you wanted to launch macro by command line?
Yeah.
There were perhaps 2.5 years ago some discussions, so you will find in the archives of the API list. It is the principle of the first version of the converter, the online converter, which was a simple PHP form, and that's called the macro by command line. So you will have an example there. So search for all prompts. But I think
maybe you can. You should take a look at the developer's guide.
Yes,
in the there's a chapter about scripting framework. I think there is a recommendation, but I'm not 100% sure. Maybe if it is still missing, so submit an issue, and we should definitely put it somewhere on the web or include it in further documentation.
I think you said that you'd seen something in the RRO forums. Was that correct? I have certainly read somewhere about it. I'm desperately trying to remember where. But it is written. But whether it was official documentation as such or whether somebody's reply, I can't remember. Okay, well, look, thank you very much for... Oh, yep.
Another question about documentation for using the compare documents feature in OpenOffice via the API. The only possibility I found is using the slots. And firing the slots is very difficult because I didn't find any documentation about the parameters for the slots. Is this somewhere?
There's a little bit in slots.sxc. Have you got that? There's a file called slots.sxc available from,
yeah.
But it's not particularly brilliant.
Yeah. From this document, I found out which slot I have to fire, but the parameters for the slots I had to try and error.
Likewise.
So I currently don't know if you have really an API report for this function in place. So you should first ask on the API address, and if you have no API in place, so you can submit the feature
Thanks.
Request. And we don't have really unique APIs for every functionality.
Yeah.
And this is the reason why maybe find an example using the dispatch API. Or the dispatch API, you can use everything, or you can control the whole functionality which is available for the normal UI. So.
What were some of the things you wanted to do with redlining? What did you want to do with redlining?
I wanted to just programmatically start the compare document. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The only way I know for doing that is via the slots.
Just the slots, yes.
No, you actually had a question you didn't get.
Yes. I have written a macro to change the style of master object.
Sorry, say that again.
You have written a macro to change the style of the formula matter object in a right
now. Yep. Quite commonly on the list has come up. I've got an equation in my writer document, and I now want to change the size of them, all of my equations, so that they're using the same font size or some other attributes, so that it's consistent. Yep, I have written that macro, and it is available on my website. It's pretty crude. It took, I don't know, half an hour to code. Earlier today, came up about DocuWiki, doing the first draft of taking a writer document to convert it into DocuWiki format. That took about 2 hours. first draft, then I got some comments and had to revise it, but to actually get a basic DocuWiki up and running from Writer was about 2 hours.
I mean, for example, how would you add a hyperlink in DocuWiki in using OpenOffice?
Exactly the same as you create hyperlinks, and so you're saying to other pages or within the one document.
For example, you start typing and then you put bracket, and automatically it would be a hyperlink. I just wonder in OpenOffice if I could insert hyperlink.
Yes, it will. My macro handles that.